Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
In Chicago, two comedian skeptics named Andy and Art were mysteriously abducted by the illusionary mastermind and conspiracy theorist known only as Mr. Bunker. The following serves as a record of Bunker's attempt to convince non-believers of the truth about conspiracies and paranormal activity. Andy and Art give an uninterrupted presentation and verdict on the plausibility of these offbeat topics, delivering what they call the whole enchilada. Will Mr. Bunker convince these two skeptics any of this is real? Will it convince you?
Welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. As always, I'm your co-host, Andy Hart. And with me, as always, is your co-host, Art Stone.
Thanks for the gold, kind stranger.
That's it. That's right. Art's only going to reply today in Reddit cliches.
Oh, fellow man of culture, I see.
I would like to point out that Art is wearing a cap, and he did tip his brim at me.
Epic comment. Time. Thanks. Take my up, dude.
Edit.
Oh, God, I can't even do it with this right.
Edit.
Dude.
Why are you giving me awards? Who spends money on this website?
Who spends money on us?
Who spends money on us? You know who does it?
Our patrons?
Our patrons. Art. Right. Our proud patrons, our beloved bunk funkers. These people are in the penultimate tier of human beings. they are nearly us.
It's true. And I don't know why they hide it from the rest of their friends and family.
Yeah, I don't know why. We part of the whole Patreon thing is that we can see your IP addresses. And for all of our bunk funkers that are patrons, they're all masked. It all says that they're coming from different countries every time anybody logs in.
Right.
And yeah, we do track your IP addresses. No, okay. We don't really. I just realized that probably seems aggressive to people. Yeah. We don't actually do that. That was just for humor.
It's Patreon doing it.
It's Patreon. Yeah. We did not install special cookies on our Patreon website that collect your IP address and user information that we've used to sell to third-party marketing firms.
Sure.
And which are supplying us with huge sums of cash for all
massive
of this user
sums
data.
Of cash.
Anyway.
And Reddit karma.
Anyway, we have to, Reddit karma. Anyway, we have to cut the show a little short today because I'm picking up a new Lamborghini at the dealership. It's new. It's custom made. I didn't really fit into a regular Lamborghini, so this is an extra wide model. It doesn't fit on the normal road.
It's true. And I'll be, picking between which Gulfstream I want to get to take me to the Maldives. You know, Andy, speaking of these patrons, though.
Whoa, what about them?
Well, one of them.
We got a new one, Art.
Well, one of them. Nope.
Oh, you were going about who suggested the episode for the day. Yeah, that did come from a patron, too. I mean, look, we got a lot happening here, Boing Funkers. We got a lot of stuff going on. And look, a patron suggested today's episode.
That's right.
And we got to talk about this right at the top because I'm a fucking idiot, first of all.
Yeah, you are.
So this is our longtime bunk funker.
Longtime.
Longtime patron.
OG.
OG patron.
Very OG.
Yeah, very OG. Maybe the OG patron of the show, potentially.
Possibly.
Art's going to look it up while Art, does the research. Anyway, this person has been a longtime supporter of the show.
Yeah. OG.
The OG patron of this show.
Like almost number one.
The very, almost number, almost very first patron of this show. This is Pedro.
This is Pedro.
Pedro has been, has gotten a shout out on the show before, has suggested episodes before. Pedro is a great friend of the show. Pedro, his username in the Discord.
Right, the Bunker Discord.
Is Me Llamo Pedro.
Me Llamo Pedro. Yep. My name is Pedro.
My name is Pedro. Just literally today, which for you, those of you in the Discord, is going to date when we're recording this, but
right,
whatever.
That's what you get.
That's what you get. Behind the scenes access.
Behind the scenes access.
So just today in the Discord, our other bunk funker and longtime patron, Jeremy.
That's right.
Brought up that Pedro's name is Me Llamo Pedro.
Right.
And not Melamo Pedro. I literally have never put that together before.
And then you roped me into it.
And then I falsely claimed on accident that Art and I agreed on this, that it wasn't
not.
Me, that we didn't know it was
Me Llamo
Pedro.
I always knew it was Me Llamo Pedro.
So to everybody listening, I'm sorry. I'm the only idiot here. Art is a linguistic expert.
Yeah, baby. Not in English, though.
Not in English. Only in Spanish.
That's right.
He knows all the Spanish words, and I don't. So, Pedro, thanks for this suggestion.
That's right.
Today we're going to be talking about the legend of El Charro Negro.
That's right.
This is kind of a...
It's a horse.
It's a... Well,
right?
It's a charro.
Yeah.
It's a creepy kind of ghost, demonic story coming out of Mexico.
Mm.
So, you know...
I know nothing about this.
Yeah, Art knows nothing about it. I'm going to teach Art about it. I'm going to teach you about it. If you can't wait, if you're ready to get scared out of your mind...
Scared out of your freaking gourd.
If you're ready to go loco, you can fast forward through what we're about to do and go right to where the timestamp directs you in the show notes, and you can get right into all that ghosty goodness.
That ghosty goodness.
Because first, before we do that, Art and I got to update you on how we got abducted this week. And we also have to do a bunker alarm for our newest patron, which, I mean, there's no surprise anymore because I already started it. So
that's okay.
Whatever. But first, we're going to tell you about how we got abducted.
Sure.
So this has been a busy week for us, as usual.
As usual.
I mean, you both bunk funkers know we got a lot going on. We recently were asked.
That's right.
By the FTC to become... standards and practices consultants for other podcasts.
Yeah, these are people who are involved in other shows, and their job, when they're involved with a TV network or whatever, is to, you know, make sure that TV shows are less funny. They take out all the swears, the naughty words, things deemed inappropriate by the FTC, right?
Right. So our job was basically to, like, go through the content and... Right. Then properly sanitize it for consumption.
They came to us and they said, nobody knows how to be, like, you guys are the foremost experts on being obnoxious, on being inappropriate, on being just frat house chatter, just like the fucking lowest dredges of society. I said, oh my goodness, thank you so much.
We are
it's
experts.
Good to finally be recognized,
as an expert. You know, they were like, oh, there's probably no bad words or weird sexual positions that anybody's going to say that,
you guys
know,
haven't
most
already.
People at Standards and Practices maybe haven't heard of it, but you two degenerate cretins are probably already familiar with all of this disgusting stuff that's really only theoretical and no two human beings have ever actually done to each other.
Right, right,
and it's
right.
Like, yeah, that's pretty much accurate. Thank you for noticing.
Right. So, they brought us to consult on a couple of shows.
I mean, it's government work. We're not really at liberty to say which shows.
Well, let's just say you have to have a really high IQ to understand one of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Fellow people of culture will understand.
Yeah. Let's just say we weren't in a pickle with this one. We were a pickle.
Funniest shit I've ever seen.
Wink, wink.
But yeah, you know, we had to remove certain, you know, like, you know, there's certain things where it's like, you know, they want to say, I mean, there's. There's like minor league shit where it's like trying to say shit and fuck and piss and cunt and fucking motherfucker. And, you know, the seven words, right?
Right, the seven words you can't say on TV.
Which are much like the dwarves, and sometimes you get them confused with a dwarf. So I would say, like, well, you can't say sleepy, you can't say bashful. And they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'd be like, shut up! Who's the expert?
Who's the standards and practices here?
So those are minor, like, those are fucking knock them out of the park.
That's, you know, easy, that's easy, that's easy, because you can just look at the script and see that shit coming. You know, what's harder, and this is where we really excel, I think, is like you start to watch, you want to watch, especially for some programs that are, say, animated, which maybe we worked on an animated show. You know, if a character's drawn too much, the way the character's drawn, it looks too much like a penis.
Right.
You want to like make sure that the character doesn't appear in the scene, even if it's really relevant for the plot. So there's things like that that are much harder to detect because you can kind of sneak in like, oh, he's standing upright.
Right, right.
Oh, but also he's got really big shoes on, so it looks like balls.
Right.
Well, I mean, then you got to strike him from the thing because it looks too much like a penis.
And then there was like, you know, we did a lot of work, good work too, and a big part of standards and practices is protecting Tom Cruise's image.
Right.
So we had to make sure there's making fun of Tommy Cruise.
Yeah, little known fact.
Mentioning the big S. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Little known fact that...
It ain't Superman.
Little known fact that certain religions control the FTC. One religion in particular.
Yeah.
Which is definitely real.
And definitely not a religion.
And definitely a religion. And definitely deserves to be tax exempt. And definitely is not just a scam created by a science fiction writer. Despite what you might have heard.
So there's a lot of protecting Tom Cruise's image. There's a lot of saying that the new Top Gun movie is the number one movie in the world. It's the best movie ever made.
You have to underscore a lot that both movies performed really well at the box office.
Right. And you have to constantly mention either, you know, you might not know this, Spunk Funkers. Look for it in your next favorite show that involves Tom Cruise. But there's always an asterisk or in italics somewhere that says, you know, Tom Cruise doesn't know the location of Shelley Miscavige.
You know,
those sorts of things. Like, you have that to make sure that's, to be mentioned.
Right. You have to mention that's in there, that nobody knows where Shelley Miscavige
nobody
is.
Nobody knows.
Because for all we know, she didn't ever actually exist. And she definitely had control over her own person and disappeared of her own volition. You know, you have to make sure that they say things like, oh, this is going to be really hard. This mission is impossible. As long as you do that, Tom Cruise is protected. But, you know, if Tom Cruise comes up and they draw him in the animation, you know, because maybe the show is animated.
Right, maybe it's an animated show.
You got to make sure that Tom Cruise isn't shorter than all the other characters. He's got to be taller than them.
That's right. He cannot have his height accurately portrayed.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of different ways, too, to say different things and different phrases. We really are wordsmiths when it comes to different things and ways you can say stuff. You know, instead of shit, say doo-doo.
Mm-hmm.
You can say poo-poo.
Instead of saying
poop.
Instead of saying cum, you can say crotch custard. You can say sex goo.
Right.
You can say baby goop. You can say my seed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways to rephrase things, and I don't think that people, you know, like, I get it that the writers of some shows are rightly considered very intelligent because the material they put out can only be understood by higher minds.
Right.
But, you know, Art and I are kind of the geniuses of rewriting things, I guess, is what you want to say. You know, instead of a hand
very job. Very leech-like.
Yeah.
You know, we can't create anything fucking good ourselves, but fuck, we're like a lamprey. We'll fucking attach ourselves to a shark and just eat the scraps.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And we'll redo those scraps.
You know, there's
no shame about it.
There's an old saying that those who can't do, teach.
Yeah, that's us, baby.
And those who can't teach become judges. So that's why we've come to judge things, because we don't know how to do anything and we can't teach anybody anything.
So then we got an interesting, I guess, offer in the mail.
Yeah. Look, it's the government, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everything's through the mail.
Right. They're obsessed with their post office.
Postal service. Oh, my God. The postal service.
Where we were asked to review Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast.
Now,
this show.
Our initial response to them was, this may be a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And they said, it's not a conflict of interest because nobody's interested in your show. And I guess it makes sense when you think about it. So yeah. We agreed, but whew, I think
this show is rough.
This is bad.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no drawings, but the pictures you get in your mind are literally of nothing but people who look like penises.
Yeah, these guys they definitely seem very sexually frustrated because mm-hmm. they have to put sexual situations into every single fucking thing they talk about.
Yeah, and you can kind of tell that they're losers because they keep talking about how great they are and how good at everything they are, but
they can't even avoid capture.
It's obvious that it's a joke, but like not a funny joke, like funny, like, oh, ha, ha, ha. You know, you can tell that it's just kind of sad. So it's funny in the sense that you're like, oh.
It's not well crafted because it's kind of been the same thing for multiple years and they just keep pushing it until the hope is that people just accept it for what it is.
Yeah, we listened to a lot of episodes of this show and there wasn't a lot of variety in the format or the content. And honestly, the personalities are pretty grating over the long haul. I mean, you know, and these obviously things like that fall outside of standards and practices. I mean, people are allowed to be grading.
Yeah.
You know, it's some feedback for these two hosts that maybe they should consider not being so shitty.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have potty mouths. They really do. Especially one of them. He's a very sexy mouth, but it's just so filthy.
Yeah. He's always talking about being on the toilet. And an open-faced toilet? What is that?
What does that even mean?
Does it mean a toilet with no seat?
I guess so.
I guess he's just dropping his buns in the water.
Yeah,
I guess his buns are touching the toilet water.
Which, you know, you can say that. That's okay. We can get that through.
Buns are okay.
Buns are totally okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, there's a lot of room for improvement on this show for sure. And,
yeah, we had to, I mean, when we started cutting things, it's like, basically, you get them saying, welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast, and then saying the whole enchilada, and then it's over. And that's all that's arable.
It's rough, Bunk Funkers, and honestly, Andy and I were feeling pretty embarrassed.
Yeah.
We're embarrassed for who we are, for the show, and for everything we've ever done.
I mean, this is a good lesson to all of you Bunk Funkers out there that introspection can be a good thing, but it can also be pretty devastating. I don't recommend looking into yourself too much because you might not like what you find. And I don't think that you want to deal with that. I think you just want to keep doing what you're doing, even if it's destructive to you. Because, look, we looked at this. We looked at this show. And we looked at ourselves. We said, this is really sad. And we started to feel the shame come over us from what we'd done and what we continue to do.
Right. Years worth of shame.
Yeah.
Washing over us.
Yeah.
Like a tidal wave.
Yeah. It's like we... Like me, so many moonlit nights, we've fallen down shirtless on the beach at midnight. The tide starts coming in.
Yeah.
And it just covers our sweaty, half-naked bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The water starts going in our mouth. We just sort of cough and roll over.
And honestly, Bunkfuckers, we sort of just captured ourselves.
We feel like there's...
We solemnly walked into the bunker, heads down.
Heads down.
In shame.
But look, we're approaching it this way, Bunk Funkers. We had to come here. We had to do this.
Right.
Because we have to change.
So definitely, starting next week, we are 100%, 110%...
Definitely.
Going to be a... Standards and Practices approved podcast that is PG-13 or under.
Yep.
And safe for family and friends, non-explicit,
safe
100%.
Safe for family. We're also going to change the format.
Yep. Totally new format.
No more conspiracies, no more ghost stories, no more true crime.
We're going to be teaching the alphabet.
Yep.
We're going to be teaching kids math and science.
Yep.
And it's gonna be a kids podcast.
Yeah, it's gonna be mostly kids podcast. We're gonna have a little segment.
Family podcast.
Yeah, we're gonna have a little segment where we do jokes, dad jokes,
right?
Jokes for kids, knock knock jokes and stuff. That'll go about 45 minutes, and then we're gonna do, you know, the lesson for the day.
Right. So look for that, Bunk Funkers.
Yeah. I think you patrons are really gonna love it.
Yeah.
Because I think this is right in your wheelhouse.
Yep.
A lot of you have kids. They're really going to appreciate how to learn to count.
Yep. So we're going to be in the same vein as Sesame Street.
We're even in talks with
Andy and Art's Poppy Seed Street Avenue. That's what it'll be called.
Poppy Seed Avenue.
Andy and Art's Poppy Seed Avenue. Come on down to Andy and Art's Poppy Seed Avenue.
And no.
You're going to learn.
Beefers, it's got nothing to do with heroin.
No opiates involved.
This is not an opiates thing. This is just an education thing. Yeah, and who knows? Maybe we'll have some puppet friends that come by.
That's right.
And there's a lot of interesting real characters that live on Indian Arts, Poppy Seed Avenue.
But yeah, it turned out Mr. Bunker was the one who hired us to review our own show, and you know,
it may be one of his better tricks, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because he got us to do the dirty work.
I know, like, someone call up fucking Steely Dan because I don't want to do your fucking dirty work.
I know.
Oops. I think we should start putting coins in a coin jar every time we swear.
Yeah. Well, this is the transition.
Right, but we'll get through this episode and then next week, for sure.
Definitely.
We're going to start being standards and practices friendly. Mm-hmm. No more frat house chatter.
Nope.
We're going to be acceptable by everyone. We are going to match everybody's standards and practices. That is our goal. We want to be, no matter who you are in the world, you will listen to the show and say, I approve. So, right. I mean, easy task.
Right.
Right. Everyone in the world, pretty similar.
Yeah. Now, one of the drawbacks of this means that we, in order for the show to be family friendly, we have to completely erase all of our back catalog from the internet. So if any of you actually enjoyed any of this content, you got to go out right now and download it, all of it, as many times as you can, just to make sure you have a copy of it.
Yeah. So please go through the entire back catalog, listen to every episode once, twice, maybe even three times.
And to make sure that you get it, you got to listen all the way through. You can't skip.
Right.
Can't skip any parts of it or you'll lose those parts.
Skipping the intro. There'll be no more intros in the new one.
Right, no intros.
We understand that a good 60% of the population doesn't enjoy it.
We're just going to have
So why would we sit here and aim for that 40% who enjoys the same things that we do?
Yep, we're going to have a new theme song done by Pentatonix. And it's going to be all about Indian Arts, Poppy Seed Avenue.
Right. Learning, family-friendly, fun, just all around good, wholesome.
Family entertainment.
Family entertainment.
This is going to be one of these podcasts you can gather the family around your device and just play it for everybody.
Right.
Turn on your Alexa and let Andy and Art's Poppy Seed Avenue fill your home with the sounds of learning. So.
Well, you know, I mean, we're going to get to that for sure next week, Bunk Bunkers.
Definitely next week. So this is going to start. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no going back from here.
Right.
We definitely cannot get out of this. It's for sure going to happen next week. But this week is still, we're in the transition phase.
That's right.
So this is the last Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast before we transition over to Indian Arts Poppy Seed Avenue.
That's right.
So we're going to get into this. We're going to get into a ghost story today, kind of.
Well, we have a bunker alarm.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
I know what I'm doing here.
Oh, I don't know where you're going sometimes. This isn't going to happen with Andy and Art's Poppy's.
No,
Avenue.
No. We'll be much
it's
more
be
organized.
Fully scripted out.
Fully scripted. Everything scripted. We're going to have a director, a producer.
Yeah.
I'm going to have somebody with like...
Fucking Hamiltons will be involved in some way.
With boards on the side so I can't look around. And they're going to have a little
Justin
whip.
Justin Link will do something.
Yeah, Justin Link's going
to
be here.
We'll force him to do it.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the puppets. he's going to be all the puppets. He's going to be actually the guy in the biggest puppet suit.
Yeah, he is the Snuffleupagus.
The full body, yeah.
The Justin Nuffleupagus.
Justalupagus.
Justalupagus.
Oh, yeah. I know that guy. Shipping magnate. Athenos Jussolophicus. But before we get into today's topic,
okay,
bunk bunkers, we got to do a bunker alarm.
We got to do it.
We got a new patron for this show. So, bunk bunkers, this is easy for me today. There's one bunk bunker.
There's one
new patron to thank.
Yeah.
And it's only one name.
Yep.
I can't go wrong. So please, bunk bunkers, join me in thanking our newest bunk bunker, newest patron of this show, Brain. Oh, fuck, it's Brian. Oh, God damn it.
Hey, Brian.
You get that one, Brian?
Okay, Brian.
Get it?
Lois, where's Brian?
No, that's not him.
Brian.
Hello, Peter. It's me, Brian.
That's not really Brian.
Well, Joe. Brian, you ever get that one? Thanks, Brian.
Wait, keep going. These are some of the best Family Guy impressions I've ever heard.
The best Family Guy? Giggity, giggity, giggity. I do an okay Quagmire.
Let's do, okay, do giggity, Cleveland. Giggity, giggity.
Hello, Peter. Hey, Cleveland. Peter.
All right, do Lois.
Peter. What are you doing? Get. It's me, Chris.
Then Meg. I'm not even fucking do Meg.
All right, now Stewie.
Oh, Peter. Oh, Chris. It's me. It's me, the pedophile old man who wants to fuck Chris.
Oh, that's the best one.
Yeah, this is not pretty bad.
It's me, Stewie. Stewie Griffin. I'm an idiot. What the deuce? Remember, that was my catchphrase, with the deuce. Oh. I'm an evil little baby, but I'm also the best part of the show. A lot of my clips are on TikTok.
Vincent Price.
Hey, it's me, Joe. I'm in a wheelchair and I don't have legs.
I'm Joe's wife, Bonnie. I'm kind of an ancillary character.
Can you do...
Oh, no. Oh, I'm this guy. I don't know my name.
Can you go back and do some more Peter for us?
Mr. Peter Schmidt.
Let's see if I can... Don Knotts?
Lois.
Mr. Bearderschmidt. Angus is getting out of the county jail.
Brian, this is like that one time that I joined a Patreon for a stupid fucking conspiracy comedy show.
Oh, my God.
All right, Brian. That was for you.
A little bit for you, Brian. That's not the bunker alarm. That's just for you.
That's a little taste.
That's just a little...
A little extra magic.
This is a wet your whistle, Brian. Brian, thank you so much for being a patron of the show. We do really appreciate it. And in your honor for becoming a patron of this show, we're going to do something really special, which we do for every patron, so it's not all that special for you. But we're going to do your own custom bunker alarm as given to us by the Bunk Tech Bunker Alarm 3000. Mm. So I'm just going to go ahead and turn the machine on here.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, big, huge, oh my God. Like classic Frankenstein level power switch.
Yes, just, it's alive.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
All right, I'm being hoisted into the air with the machine.
Look at him.
Into the active storm that's happening right now.
There's a storm.
I'm sure that you can hear the thunder and the lightning cracking in the background, which is definitely not being added in post, or it might not get, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what kind of week one of us is having.
We'll see if the microphone picked it up. Yes, it's alive!
Oh, wow. Large, I don't even know what those are called, circular valve.
A large wheel.
Wheel valve. Crush your wheel valve.
That one needs a little grease. Now, flip the switch.
Okay. Andy flipped the same switch that powered it on.
Ah, it does more than one thing. Why shouldn't it? All right.
That's great engineering.
Now we just wait for the lightning strike, and then the alarm will go off in three. That's right. I control the lightning. 3, 2, 1.
Wow.
Brian,
Brian,
that was your bunker alarm.
Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Hey, can I get down from here?
No, you're stuck up there, buddy.
The machine turned off.
Oh, Andy is.
And the storm's gone. Oh, fuck.
Oh, Brian.
Anyway, Brian.
Brian, top marks for not trying. Arctic Monkeys lyric. Wow. I just wanted to get that one out there.
Wow, great.
But Brian, thank you. Thank you for the patronage. Thank you for the supporting the show. And, you know, yeah.
Brian,
I'm Mort. I'm another character that's also on the show.
Does he show up that often?
I don't know, dude. I don't watch Family Guy. No, I only watch the clips on fucking like TikTok and YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, that's all I've seen for a long time. Anyway, Brian, thank you so much for your support of the show. We hope you enjoy all that extra sexy content for patrons only. Behind the scenes content. In fact, it's behind the scenes because it is.
Behind some kind of curtains.
Behind some kind of curtain. We don't know. We're not in charge of the curtains around here.
Right.
Brian, we hope you enjoy all that extra content, including tens of hours of extra episodes, a cooking video that Art and I, we cook the whole enchilada in the nude.
Right.
Headshots of me and Art delivered to your house daily.
Yeah.
Whether you want them or not, you can't turn it off. It's not a feature you can shut down. Access to the Discord.
Yeah.
We hope you'll join us and join in the conversation.
But no pressure.
No pressure. Brian, we're so glad to have you. Bunk Funkers, if you are so envious of Brian
Are you envious of Brian? You should be.
Because, Bunk Funkers, don't. Don't do this to yourselves. Don't do this to Brian. Do not covet him. We're all in different parts in our life.
That's true.
There's no reason to covet other people.
In fact, it's a commandment. One of the ten.
Yeah, don't covet your neighbor's ass or pussy or dick.
Isn't that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Covering his donkeys or something, right?
No, don't cover his ass.
Right.
Or his dick.
Yeah, his dick and balls.
Or his pussy. Whatever your neighbor's got, don't covet it.
Stop coveting it.
Stop looking at your neighbor and coveting them. Just be happy. The message of the Bible is be happy with what you got.
Sure.
And don't ask any questions. Bunk Funkers, if you're envious of Brian and you think, I want all that access to that content, And I want to be a patron of this show for some reason, like into Gilbert Godfrey. But if you want access to all this stuff and more, if you're so inclined, if you have the means to do so, visit us at patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. And for only $5 a month, you can get access to all that great content.
Yes, you can.
But now we've got some other great content for you.
Yes, we do.
Because we're jumping in. We're jumping in hard, too.
Hard and hot.
This is a shallow pool, and we're belly flopping into it.
Oh, hell yeah.
And we're going to smash into the bottom of the pool,
oh,
and we're going to spray the water of knowledge all over you about El Charro Negro here on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast.
Brian, this is like that time when I was in Mexico and I helped bring about a cryptid legend thing.
Boing Foinkers.
Boing Foinkers.
As we mentioned already, today's episode was suggested by a longtime beefer and nearly the OG patron of this show, Pedro. When Pedro suggested this topic, he also mentioned that he more easily believes the stories of the supernatural that come out of Mexico than those that come out of the USA. That he feels that Mexico may have more paranormal activity overall. And other bunk funkers agreed with this sentiment that Mexico is maybe a more mysterious and supernatural place than the USA. So I thought, why not see how Art and I feel?
Okay.
Right? Will we be swayed by this creepy story coming from Mexico? How many Mexican names and Spanish words can I mispronounce? We'll find out all that and more on today's episode, El Charro Negro. All right, play the theme song.
Oh.
What, we don't have the theme for this episode?
Andy.
Huh?
We've never done an episode. We didn't talk about this.
Oh. well, then I guess I'll just move on. I had this really cool idea where there was like, you know, there would be this intro.
Uh-huh.
And then there would be this like break, and I would like make it set up, and it would be like this real fast, like,
yeah,
you know, 15, 30 second like musical bump.
Okay.
You didn't.
Well, I didn't get that memo.
I didn't send it to you.
You just assumed that it would appear out of nowhere.
I thought we were on the same page about this.
This thing that we've never discussed or done in any episode ever?
Yeah. I don't know why this is so hard for you. Can you ever just meet me halfway on anything? Jesus Christ. Anyway, let's get into this story.
Oh, jeez.
Fuck.
Fuck. Fuck me, dude. Sorry, I forgot. I forgot to read your mind.
Thank you for apologizing.
The thing I can do.
Thank you for apologizing. Anyway, today's story begins in the Mexican state of Jalisco.
Ooh.
On Mexico's central western coast. So this is along the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
You know, Jalisco goes like from the center of Mexico, like to the coast.
Okay.
In that general, like center of the country kind of thing. Specifically in eastern Jalisco is the city of San Juan de los Lagos, which is home to the Basilica of the Virgin of San Juan de los Lagos.
Hmm.
The basilica is a pilgrimage site for members of the Catholic faith, because inside the basilica.
Love a good basilica.
I know that, you know what it means. What's the difference between a cathedral and a basilica?
I have no fucking clue.
A cathedral is like, I don't know what the difference is when you start talking about chapel, cathedral,
one
church.
One has a buttress.
A basilica is when the Pope has visited.
Oh.
So in 1990, I think exactly, Pope John Paul II came to this
very
church.
Popular Pope.
Very popular Pope. So he visited this town in Jalisco and visited this church. So now it's a basilica. But the church itself is very old. Dates back to the 18th century.
Nice. Cool. But
the basilica is a pilgrimage site for members of the Catholic faith because inside the basilica is a small image of the Virgin Mary. It's only like 38 centimeters high, so it's not very big.
Okay.
It's made from sugarcane paste and is believed to date back to the early 1500s.
This is a portrait?
It's a portrait. A picture of the Virgin Mary.
Oh, made of sugarcane paste.
Sugarcane paste.
Can't let that get wet.
Yeah, no.
Better not put your fucking stupid Fun Dip sticks. That's stupid fucking opinion.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if you melted down? Jeremy, hear me out on this. Yeah. If you melted down a bunch of those Fun Dip sticks,
yeah. Why don't you
what kind of artwork could you do with that?
Text fucking Justin Link again and say that, oh, a plethora of other bunk funkers agreed with me that Fun Dip sticks are.
At least three people. I heard no disagreements.
There was like one.
I heard no disagreements, though. No objections to this thought. Nobody challenging this.
Yeah, okay.
That means wide acceptance.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, the image of the Virgin Mary, this sugarcane paste image of Mary, was credited with its first miracle in 1623. And here's the story behind the first miracle. A family of acrobats had a show which included them, quote unquote, flying over a row of spear points.
Mm.
The 7-year-old daughter in the family fell onto the spears while they were performing, and died instantly.
Got to get good.
Local women brought the image of the Virgin Mary to the body of the child and prayed over it, and the girl revived.
Whoa!
Came back to life from the dead. And the talent agent goes, that was a hell of an act. What do you call it? And the dad goes, the Aristocrats.
Like 2 weeks in a row.
I know, I can't help it. It was the setup was too good.
The setup
was
wow.
But that's
just guess.
But that's the first miracle. An acrobat died falling on spears and was revived from the dead by the image.
This is a famous thing in Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is
in Catholic
lore. Like you fucking put the image of the Virgin Mary or somebody else on something and performs a miracle.
Right. The Virgin Mary, you know, there's another famous location in Guadalajara,
mm-hmm,
in Mexico. And it's also a place of miracles related to the Virgin.
Jesus
Mary.
On toast never did shit, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's ever been cured by Jesus on a piece of toast.
Right.
But his mom, very good at miracles.
Right.
In lots of different places. So the image's fame after this in 1623, the image's fame only grew from there. And today, San Juan de los Lagos hosts hundreds of visitors every day at the basilica.
Wow.
And an and an estimated more than 7 million people every year come to the
Whoa.
Basilica. Especially on like holidays and big celebrations. They can Damn. Have like up to 2 million people at one event. So it's a very, very well-traveled spot.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So San Juan de los Lagos was already famous by the end of the 18th century. The miracles attributed to the Virgin's intercession attracted many people to the area, including some people who were wealthy. One of the people that showed up in the town around this time was a man who was good-looking. He had superlative manners and arrived in the city dressed as a charro with a beautiful horse. He had a beautiful horse.
Sounds like a combo of me and you.
I know, right? It's got, you're good-looking, you have good manners, and you dress like a charro, and I am a horse.
Nice.
Now, if for those of you bunk funkers who don't know what a charro is, I'm going to explain it. A charro, right. And I'm sorry that I don't roll. I'm not rolling the R's. It should be a charro, but I you know, charro. My American dialect. But anyway, charros are basically like traditional Mexican cowboys or rancheros, if you will. They have a distinctive style of dress, which typically includes a sombrero, a serape, an embroidered jacket, sometimes very heavily embroidered, and tight cut pants.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They're like gauchos, but a little bit more snazzied up. Like
yeah.
A gaucho going to a fucking wedding or something.
It's like a very fancy kind of cowboy.
Right.
Is basically what it is. And so elaborate charro style outfits eventually became in Mexico a display of wealth. Like a way to show off how rich you were, the more elaborate your outfit is, especially when you're riding on horseback. So with that context in mind, let's go back to the story. So this handsome, congenial guy rides into town on a beautiful horse, and he's dressed like a charro. The man had a name, but it's lost to history because everyone in town just knew him as El Charro Negro. Now, regardless of what his name was, this charming fella immediately began to try to make friends with all the locals in San Juan de los Lagos. The man tried to approach all the social circles in the town, asking so many questions about the town, its customs.
Wow, this really does sound like me.
Yeah.
Except for the whole approaching people part.
Right, right. But he had a lot of questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
He wanted to know about the architecture in the town and the history of all the buildings. Now, what he told people was that he came from Spain and that he was waiting for a delivery of some goods, which he didn't bring with him because he was looking for a place to live and considered San Juan de los Lagos a good place to live. But he was trying to investigate, basically, is what he said. Now, at every step, this man, he's so good-looking, so charming, the women in town are kind of infatuated with him, right? Like, he's like, wow, this is a great-looking guy. So much so that he starts to create some jealousy with the men in town.
Whoa!
Who eventually only start being nice to him because he's got good manners.
Okay.
Like he's so nice to them, they feel like they have to be nice to him, but they don't like him.
So this is a dude who women want to fuck.
He's just like you.
And dudes want to be with.
Beat into a pulp.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Just like you. So the suspicion from the men in town led to El Charro Negro being watched by all the men in the town. They start like keeping an eye on what he's doing. So unknown to the people in San Juan de los Lagos, El Charro Negro was actually in the employ of the Spanish crown. He was an agent for the Spanish emperor.
Okay.
The town of San Juan de los Lagos had a fair every year in honor of the Virgin Mary, and El Charro Negro was in town to investigate where missing profits from the fair had been diverted because they weren't making their way into the coffers of the Spanish Empire. That's for sure.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. So El Charro Negro finally gets a tip that some mysterious jugs arrived at a house in town during the festival.
Okay.
And I mean, let me tell you, I've been to some festivals where I saw mysterious jugs. I'll tell you that much. But anyway, the suspicion is that maybe the money was held inside these jugs. Yeah.
Hey, Peter, I went to I went to Mardi Gras.
I saw a lot of fuck. You know where I'm going with it.
Yeah, I get it.
A lot of mysterious.
Just like Family Guy, that joke you can read before it ever hits. You don't have to wait for the punchline.
Well, there would be you do the flashback, and then it would be like they would flip the joke again, where it would actually be Peter looking at weird jugs.
Right.
And that would be the bit.
Yeah.
And you just do that like 50 times in a row.
Yeah.
You guys just have an episode.
There's no reason to write a cohesive plot.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Who cares? Season 45 of that show. They don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Just make the drawings. Just make the drawings talk. So El Charro Negro rents a house next door to the house that he suspected hiding the money from the fair. So where these jugs were believed to be delivered. So what he thinks is, I'm going to dig underground to get onto this property.
Makes total sense to me. Why would you try the door or the window or the roof?
No reason to walk over there and start talking to people. Because you're a charming person. Like, obviously people will talk to you, but instead you should just dig into their property. So he digs underground. When he pops his head out of the ground on the other property, the homeowner is waiting for him. Assuming
you were a gopher. No, it's me.
I'm having a bad day. So when El Charro Negro pops his head out from underground, the homeowner's there waiting for him. And assuming that El Charro Negro had come to bang his wife, the homeowner decapitates El Charro Negro with a machete. Without any questions, apparently.
Hey, I don't blame this
just
guy.
Just instantly decapitates him with
a
machete.
If you try to dig on my property in any way, shape, or form, I will
decapitate you.
With a machete.
Right.
So, it makes sense.
So, here's the interesting part of this story, Art. Because I know the rest has been kind of boring. But interestingly, El Charro Negro's headless body runs away. Gets out of the ground and runs away by itself. A search for the body turned up nothing. So the townsfolk buried only El Charro Negro's head. And since that fateful night, the townsfolk say that during the fair, you can hear the spurs of El Charro Negro walking down the street, and you can hear the neighing of horses. It's also said that women in the town have strange dreams, and the men in town wake up with less money than they had the night before. Which I think is probably something that a robber told them. Oh, that's probably El Charro Negro.
Yeah. Hey, that guy's right. Taking his fucking wallet.
Yeah. Now, as scary as that story was, gird your loins here, boink foinkers, because that's just one version of the tale of El Charro Negro.
Wow.
Let's jump into another creepy story, okay? So once there was a man named Juan. He was a very poor and humble miner who, like all of his fellow miners, was being exploited for his labor.
Sure.
And didn't get paid enough.
Tale as old as time.
Tale as old as time. Tale as current as time. So, Juan and his wife, Maria, had two children, a six-year-old girl, or in some versions, it's a boy. They had a six-year-old, and they also had a two-month-old baby boy. So, one day after work, Juan and his friends go to the cantina for a drink.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all complaining about work and how little they get paid.
Love it.
So, Juan says, while they're out drinking, that he wished he was rich. He said he would give anything to be rich. Soon as he says that, a tall man dressed in a jet black charro outfit approaches him. Now, Juan couldn't see the man's face because of the sombrero, but he could smell this strong aroma, this burning scent that seemed to go behind this man.
Like sulfur?
Yeah.
Wow.
So the man stands next to Juan, and in a deep, ghastly voice, he asks him, "Anything? If you're serious." I mean, in my version, he sounds like Batman.
This is you're this version of Charro Negro. Yeah. I was the other one.
Yeah, you were the other one. That this is me. Listening to people's conversations at the bar and then approaching them creepily.
Smells of sulfur.
Yeah. I ate a lot of eggs. Anything? If you're serious, meet me at the old abandoned mine at midnight. Yeah, well, I think I already see where this story is going, right, Bung Bungers? One is about to become a male prostitute. Let's see how this turns out. So later, Juan leaves the cantina, he leaves his friends, and he starts walking home, and he remembers he's in an inebriated state, okay?
Sure.
So he kind of forgot about the offer that the black charro had made to him in the in the cantina. But he remembers as he's walking home, so he decides he's going to go to the old abandoned mine. He gets to the old mine's entrance, right at midnight. He didn't see anything weird and nothing's going on. So he's getting ready to leave when all of a sudden he sees a hole and a big snake inside of it.
Whoa.
Which Juan thinks the snake is staring at him. So
yeah.
Juan is so impressed with the size of this snake, he decides to, I mean, again.
It's a big ass fucking snake.
Oh man, you got such a big snake there. El Charro Negro. So anyway, he decides he's going to take this snake home because it's so big.
Okay.
And he's going to sell it the next day for some money. So he takes out a sack, he grabs the stick and puts the stick, gets the snake on the stick, puts the stick in the bag. Classic snake catching technique.
Yeah.
So once he gets home, Juan puts the sack inside a dry well. So like a water well that's empty, that's dry. He puts it in there and he covers it with some boards. So the snake can't get out. So it's trapped inside the well. Juan's wife, Maria, keeps asking him why he got home so late. But Juan is too drunk. He can't tell her anything. So they go to bed, and all night long, Juan has these horrible nightmares about the snake. In his dreams, the snake says to him, "Thank you for receiving me in your home and accepting me in your souls. You have received the payment for your soul. You will find it in your barn. If you decide to accept it, you will have to give me your son." So the next morning, Juan wakes up. He rushes to the barn, and in his barn, he finds sacks full of money.
Whoa.
He's still shocked at all this money that's in his barn. And then Maria is crying. He's interrupted looking at this money because Maria is crying. She tells him their baby, their two-month-old, is missing. Their older child starts pointing at the well. Juan goes over to the well. It's untouched from the night before. The boards are still on the top. He takes the boards off of the well, and he finds the shredded remains of his son's body.
Ugh.
But no trace at all of the snake. The snake has disappeared. Juan is devastated by this, but he keeps the money.
But he's rich.
But he's rich. And so he tries to cope by spending money.
Yeah.
So after some time, the snake reappeared in Juan's dreams. The snake offered to multiply Juan's fortune in exchange for another child.
Juan, you should ask for a penny that doubles every single day. That's what you should have done.
The principles of compound interest. So Juan has kind of a change after this second appearance of the snake. He starts to take mistresses in towns all over the place.
Nice.
And he does this in order to have more children.
Yeah, Juan's a fucking baller.
Mm-hmm. So once these children are born, the mysterious Charro Negro would appear and take the children away. And after a few years, Juan is very rich.
Juan's got a business.
Yeah. This is his business.
And no one is questioning how this guy made this fucking unbelievable fortune.
No. Juan is a lot like Craster in A Song of Ice and Fire, where he's just having children to keep the White Walkers from, attacking him.
Sure.
So he can live beyond the wall. But anyway, so when Juan passes away, people are at his funeral. People are praying at his funeral. While they're doing this, the Black Charro reappears. He walks down the aisle to where the casket is and says in his deep voice, "Juan, I'm here to collect your last payment." As soon as the Charro finishes this sentence, he disappears, leaving behind only the smell of sulfur, which is a lot, like you said, a lot like briefly encountering me.
Yeah.
So Juan's mourners, who were very frightened by what just happened, they decide to open the casket. To their surprise, only the skeleton was left of Juan's body. According to legends, since that night, El Charro Negro appears at night in the streets of cities and rural roads, looking for those who exchange their soul and also their sons for some gold coins.
Seems like a fair trade.
Yeah, fair trade. Yeah, you could have my soul and my son and give me some money. Stick a little bit of money for that.
When was the soul part of the contract? It seems like they had a pretty legitimate business going on here where he's giving up kids.
Remember, the snake said, "Thank you for accepting me into your home and into your souls."
Oh,
the snake told him this in his dreams.
All right, should have listened to the fucking fine print.
Mm-hmm. He didn't pay attention well enough. He was too enticed by
his money.
Should
have a lawyer review that fucking contract.
Yeah. That's why I always have a lawyer in my dreams in case anything legally binding
dream
comes
lawyer.
Up. Yeah, dream lawyer.
Have you been harmed by a snake in your dream? Call me. 555 Artie Hammer. And I'll fucking bring out my big red marker and I'll redline that contract.
Have you been hit by a semi-truck in your dreams? Let me sue the trucking company.
Dream law.
Dream law.
I specialize in dream law.
Yeah. You're a real Charlie Day. So, hey, Beavers, what do you say we take this episode from the supernatural to the natural?
Whoa.
Or
natty ices.
I don't know. Whatever. Let's talk about a 20th century encounter with El Charro Negro, okay?
Yeah.
Not an origin story, but just a full-on experience involving El Charro Negro. So in 1966, a man named Abundio Rosas was returning to his home located on the outskirts of the port of Veracruz, which is on Mexico's east coast.
That's right.
So it's on the Gulf side. Although there was a moon that night, it was hidden among the tops of the trees. So it's very dark that night, which kind of makes Abundio a little bit frightened, right? Because of all the weird shapes cast in the shadows of the moonlight up in the trees. So at some point while walking home, Abundio feels somebody's following him, but he's too afraid to turn around. So instead he starts walking faster and he pulls out his machete that he always carries with him.
Hell yeah.
He's always
good move.
So lots of machetes in this lore.
I love it.
A lot of machetes. So anyway, Abundio felt that whatever was following him was getting closer. Even though he quickened his pace, it's getting closer. Suddenly, he's overtaken by a cold sweat. He starts to feel faint. And despite all this fear, he decides to turn around and face whatever it is. He turns around, and what he saw was a huge black horse with beautiful hair.
Wow.
Beautiful jet black horse.
Wow.
Big
old horse cock.
Giant.
Massive cock.
Giant, fully erect penis on this horse. But this horse has horrible eyes, glowing red eyes.
Big old glasses. Can't see very well.
Can't see anything. He's totally blind. No, these horrible demonic eyes that look like they're throwing fire.
Ugh.
It was ridden on top of the horse is this tall, skinny man in a black hat who had no eyes, no nose, or mouth.
That's creepy.
Abundio is so frightened, he's basically paralyzed. He's just shaking in fear. And this charro riding on top of this horse holds out a hand that's red with long nails. And he took a bag, one of the bags on the side of the horse, and hands it over to Abundio. And then he opens the bag, and it's full of money. But Abundio turns it down. He doesn't want to accept it. The charro offers it to him again, and Abundio again refuses the offer. Then the charro turned on his horse without saying a word, because he has no mouth, and he rides away from Abundio. The horse doesn't make a sound. No clip-clop of the hooves, nothing.
That's my kind of horse.
Just totally silent. So after this, Abundio finally goes home. And when he gets there, he's scared, so scared he can't eat. He tells his wife what happened, and she is also scared hearing this story. So as expected, that night, neither one of them can sleep. The next day, Abundio gets up early, and he goes to the place where he had seen this mysterious charro. He looked around all over the site, and he couldn't find anything that could be considered evidence of this charro's existence. And after that night, El Charro Negro never appeared to Abundio again. Never saw this happen again.
Smart guy.
Smart guy. He turned it down. Didn't lose his soul. So those are some of the stories about El Charro Negro as a paranormal activity. And there's a lot of stories like this all across the different regions of Mexico. And a lot of them are like highly localized for the area and stuff. So let's talk about El Charro Negro in a more cultural context. So the area that is now known as Mexico has been populated by people for over 13,000 years. Long time, Art. Mm-hmm. And it's been home to some impressive human civilizations such as the Olmecs, the Maya, and the Aztecs. And as we've discussed in our episode on pre-Columbian contact theories, Mexico may have been visited by people from the old world, so to speak, before Chris Columbus, director of Home Alone, arrived in 1492. But regardless, large-scale Spanish exploration and conquest began in the early 16th century. The Spanish capture of the Aztec capital of Tenochtitlan in 1521 officially kicks off the Spanish colonial period in Mexico. So, obviously, the colonial period caused there to be some blending of cultures between indigenous people and Europeans now living and ruling in Mexico. So, some folks who are much smarter than I say that El Charro Negro is a result of the syncretism, or the amalgamation of different cultures between the Spanish and indigenous peoples. Charros themselves are a product of this same syncretism.
Sure.
Because, obviously, there was famously were no horses in Central America.
Right.
Before the Europeans arrived. So there was no horseback riding. So the fact that there are charros is obviously a blending of cultures.
Right, right, right.
So the result of the meeting of these two cultures, also it brings together two religions, right? The religion of Mesoamerican people and the religion of people from Spain, which is Roman Catholicism. And the result is a mestizo, or a blended native and Spanish. Mestizo is like a word they use to describe this blend of like indigenous and European. But it creates this mestizo popular culture that creates a figure of Ibero-American folklore, good term, that is El Charro Negro. So within the indigenous culture, apparently there is no punishing spectrum of like cultural beliefs, you know, like we have in Christianity, there's the devil. There's not a similar thing in Mesoamerican. There's no punishment. Like it's levels of goodness, but it's not
just all good times.
Right. Well, I don't know about that. It's like bad stuff happens, but
sure.
You know, you're not getting punished for things. So all of these ghosts and spirits are more like guardians of different things within the territory, like crops, animals, mines, things like that. And so they defended, indigenous people saw these spirits as defending them from the greed of colonizers when the colonizers arrived, when the Spanish arrived. So, but this perspective changed as colonizers, the Spanish, tried to convert the population to Christianity. So within a lot of, like in a lot of Christianity, right, the Spanish didn't try to just completely wipe everything out. They tried to co-opt some of the stuff and like already religious practices and just replace it with Christian stuff and Christianize things. So an example of this is human sacrifice.
It's like Diet Coke with lime.
Right.
It's still Diet Coke.
You're just trying to,
but now it's with lime.
You're trying to limeize it. So human sacrifice is a good example of this.
Oh, great example.
So the Aztecs.
Love it.
I mean.
Love it. Love the human sacrifice. Let's keep it. I love it. Hey. We fucking sacrificed our guy. His name was Jesus Christ.
You ever heard of him? No, but here's the thing, Art. So Aztecs, human sacrifice was a part of Aztec religion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Aztecs, the Spaniards thought human sacrifice was horrible.
Oh.
Because obviously the Spaniards are very empathetic and they believe that everybody has a right to exist.
Killing people is wrong. Stab, stab, stab.
What did you say about Jesus? Anyway, you didn't say it right. You're dead now. So, I mean, obviously the Spanish Inquisition was very pleasant, and it was just people.
Great time.
Just people fact-finding. So the Spanish hate human sacrifice. They make the Aztecs stop it.
Quit it.
But they're like, hey, you can't human sacrifice anymore, but you know what you can do? You can eat the flesh and blood of Christ. Here you go. Here's the Eucharist. A win-win for everybody. So that's that's an example of some of the stuff that they did. So this all gets tied in with the image of the colonizers, who are seen as money givers with the exchange of labor being exploited. So they're paying you, but they're also exploiting you, right? Like they're paying you, but not enough. They're exploiting you for your labor, which is like people see this as selling their soul, right?
Yeah.
Like they know that they're not getting a good deal.
Selling your soul to these, yes.
Right.
These,
you've sold out your country. You've sold out your people
to
the colonizers. You've sold your soul for this little bit of money. So, and all of this gets combined with like things like bullfighting, the rodeo, this image of this black charro as like a representation of the devil. So because it's like, there's this light and dark thing. So the dark is obviously the evil and light is the good.
Right.
So, in other words, the, like a demon of the Mesoamerican culture gets reworked into Charro Negro. And this is like a cautionary tale for people. So the coexistence between the indigenous and mestizo culture had caused some economic conflicts where, you know, the mestizos take over their indigenous land for their own benefit, you know, for trade or whatever it might be. So according to some records, there's a god called Mestizo Azul, which within the indigenous culture, specifically the Huicol culture, it represents the stereotype of the colonizer who threatens the native culture. So this god, Mestizo Azul, is more powerful than the other Huicol gods themselves, but he's a despot. He's an authoritarian. He's a money collector, and he has no forgiveness. So he's just a cold, hard
tax man.
Yeah, exactly. So here's a little story for you. San Martin de Caballero is known in Mexico as a saint who is asked for money. You say, when you want money, you say, San Martin de Caballero, give me a little money.
Mm-hmm.
And you also offer alfalfa to his horse.
Hell yeah.
So while
hate
in
that
the
little rascal.
Have you ever done this before?
Oh yeah, I've fed children to horses.
Thank you. Okay. So in the Mazatec culture, San Martin de Caballero is considered a nocturnal being, but not a saint. So he's known as the owner of the lands and the mountains. He owns everything, like the natural world. And his characteristics are those of the Spanish colonizers. He's white, and he greets you in Castellan. So he's like, he's from Castile. And some nights he comes down to visit his animals and watch over buried treasures. Now, if you want to get money from this being, you have to approach him in a state of sexual abstinence, and you have to offer him cocoa or a turkey. So I could probably be this guy.
Yeah, you can't be fucking.
Yeah.
But you got to be loving that chocolate and meat.
Get me some chocolate turkey. So give me a chocolate turkey. A Thanksgiving treat. So San Martin de Caballero will give the people instructions when he gives them money, which include taking his horse by the tail to the petitioner's house and to not tell anybody anything about the encounter for 4 years. And if the person doesn't fulfill either one of those things, their soul is condemned and they die immediately.
Wow.
And San Martin de Caballero takes the body and soul and makes the body and soul work for him. So he like takes them and makes them work forever. So what I'm driving at here is that El Charro Negro in the like popular folklore represents this dark side of humanity. And it's a warning about greed,
yeah,
basically. So beefers, that's the story of El Charro Negro. A cautionary tale to all you would-be colonizers out there.
That's right.
Now, honestly, I mean, everybody, you'd think the Spaniards with their rabid Roman Catholicism should have understood the perils of greed, right? Boyfoys, let's open our Bibles, King James Version, to the New Testament. Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, and I quote, "For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" As for me, I can't answer those questions. I tried to sell my soul a few years back and was told my soul was, quote, not usable and of, quote, exceptionally poor quality. I also can't answer the questions of what will happen if you go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, in Mexico, in a rural area. Maybe you'll come across a handsomely dressed figure on horseback, a jet black version of Denver's Blucifer, and maybe he'll take your soul for riches. Maybe, if you're good-hearted and true, you get something better than wealth. A whole enchilada.
Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast will be right back after this brief message.
Hey, it's Kaylee Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Welcome back to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. That was my research into El Charro Negro. Art, how's this story strike you, my friend?
It's striking me great. Wow. You know, obviously, we covered La Llorona before. Another fun, famous South American.
I think La Llorona and El Charro Negro are considered like the two ghost tales from Mexico.
Those are the heavy hitters.
Like the most famous.
I'm getting vibes of Red Ghost of Arizona as well.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit of that. A little hint of that. Mm-hmm. What other notes am I getting? As I smell this,
we're swirling El Charro Negro in our mouths.
No, I think this is great. I think I love both of all three of the stories. I think that you picked are very full of flavor and zest, and you know, they have a lot of fun tie-ins. What do you think, Andy? Would you accept El Charro Negro's offer for vast riches for your soul? And the souls of all your bastard children? A lot of fucking money, dude. You get to live a pretty nice life.
If it was my soul, yeah, sure.
You get to fuck on the reg.
I can't.
You get to sire children on the reg.
Yeah.
You get to buy boats on the reg. I don't know what else you do with lots of money, but buy boats.
It's all you do. That's all you're allowed to do. Buy jets.
Buy jets and boats.
Jets and boats. Boats and hose.
Boats and hose.
If it was just my soul, I would give it. I would do it.
You couldn't do that to all those children's.
I couldn't do it to the children because you know what? They didn't get a say in it. If they all agreed and they said, yeah, we want to be rich, and we're willing to give up our souls, I'd go, okay. But if they said no, I couldn't do it. That's my problem with Juan.
Wow.
He didn't ask his son. His 2-year-old can talk to him. Two-month-old.
Why would him taking a snake home be a sign of like, oh, yeah, I want to like, he was just like, oh, look at this dope fucking snake.
Yeah.
Well, like, I'm going to take this fucking thing home and sell it.
Well, keep in mind.
Who's he selling a snake to?
I don't know. It's a good question. One of these snake guys, I
guess. Yeah, these fucking snake guys show up at the park.
Some guy with a terrarium.
I remember when I was a little kid. You ever have this happen to you?
Yeah.
I was a little kid and we were playing like, it was
hide and seek.
Baseball or something. It was like either practice. I think it was practice. Might have been a game, but it might have been practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we're all in a little team and like some older kids came by.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm little, I'm like probably, I don't know, 7, 8, whatever. And then like these kids had to have been like nearing 18. And one of them had a fucking snake, brought a snake to the park. So he like had the snake coiled around his arm and then its little head was near his hand. He was like showing it off and we're like, this is the coolest fucking thing in the world. Like this is the dopest. This is the peak of cool.
Yeah.
Now, as an older adult, I think, what a bunch of fucking weirdos walking around a park, going up to little kids, being like, check out my snake, like in high school. And this was like the early 2000s. Like, this would have been late 90s, early 2000s. So these kids were probably like, you know, like wearing fucking JNCO jeans and like the corn kids, you know, like fucking weirdos. What a bunch of fucking creeps.
You know,
better have been related to somebody on the team.
You know, I think it's interesting.
Fucking snake pedos?
People who like are into snakes. do you ever really know any people like people who are into dogs? Like they might have one dog or maybe two dogs.
Yeah.
Like it always feels like people who are into snakes get like a lot of snakes.
Yeah.
Like I don't know
I had
if
a cousin who was into snakes.
Did he have a lot of snakes?
She
Did she have a lot of snakes?
She was into all kinds of aminals.
Yeah?
All kinds. Lots of different reptiles.
Well, you know, honestly, if you get into like rats and mice and you're into snakes, it's a very self-sustaining operation.
That's awful.
Rats, it's a circle of life, baby.
Rats are apparently like incredible pets.
Yeah, I've heard that.
We maybe even have talked about this before.
They're very smart.
They're emotionally present animals.
Yeah, kind
like
of
they
capable
feel
of
emotions.
Love.
Yeah. They care for you. They can be trained.
Yeah.
But then they only live for like a year. It's like fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah. I went to the, I was at this moth exhibit, this butterfly exhibit the other day. And there was this huge moth there. And it was like pretty impressive. It's a huge fucking moth, the Atlas moth.
Was it alive?
It was alive.
Oh.
And the person at the exhibit was saying that the moth only lives for 5 days. And it lives such a short time in this giant state. It doesn't have to eat or anything. Like all of the nutrients it needs for its 5 days of life are already inside its body when it comes out of its cocoon.
It's fucking useless.
Isn't that weird?
Point of its existence?
The only thing it can do is propagate. Fuck.
It's alive for 5 days and its mission is to fuck.
Its mission is to fuck. Wow. But they're not allowed to breed them at this exhibit. So he was just going to die.
From the people who brought you Eurotrip and Van Wilder, it's the Atlas Moth.
Rob Schneider is
Rob
the
Schneider
Atlas
is
Moth.
The Atlas Moth.
Oh, man. I'm going to die in 5 days. I got to fuck. It's me, Rob Schneider.
I'm already on day 3 and I still haven't met my dream girl.
Derp a derp da derpity der.
Oh man. This isn't your kid's Bug's Life. This Bug's Life.
Did you know that Rob Schneider is now like a right wing comedian?
Yeah.
I think it's funny.
He's always kind of been that way.
Yeah. Making copies. Nobody who enjoyed corporate life that much could be a leftist.
Anyway, yeah, moths. Fucking suck, dude. Not into them.
Why you? What?
Nobody likes moths.
You know what?
Moths.
Hold on. Shut the fuck up for a minute.
Nobody likes moths. Unless you study bugs.
I had a revelation not that long ago.
Oh God.
How do you feel about butterflies? Yeah.
It's just okay. They're kind of neat though. When you see them, you're like, oh.
But I used to be like, oh, fucking moths. Oh, I hate moths.
They're ugly butterflies, though.
But they're just butterflies.
No, they're uglier.
They're butterflies.
They're uglier and more annoying. Because butterflies are pretty. They have pretty patterns and pretty designs. And they fly and they populate the flowers. Moths are like, hey, I'm in your curtain. I'm in your curtain. Ah! Look at that lamp. Look at that fucking lamp you got outside your back porch.
Oh, man, that's a great light.
Look at that light outside your back porch.
Oh, man, that's a fucking great light.
I flutter around this shit. Oh, fuck. It's like,
I'm all dusty. Moths are so dusty.
What do you got in there, old sweaters? Ooh, let me see.
Anyway, hate moths anymore. I'm the same way with butterflies. I feel the same about moths now.
So your idea was, I'm going to take the fuck this pretty cool thing. I'm going to bring it down to the level of the thing that I don't already like.
Well, you know, as an ugly, fucked up thing, I feel some kinship with the moth. And I feel like it's wrong for me to judge them against the butterfly.
Yeah.
When, they had no control over it, just like I don't. I mean, I do, but I won't do anything about it. So that's my perspective on it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Would you sell your soul for money?
No.
What would you give up to be rich? Like what? Like something that you have about your being. What would you give up to be rich?
My time and youth.
You would become an.
Which I guess I've already done.
So, hello, bunk funkers, rich like, bunk funkers, give Art some money.
Everybody
okay?
else in the fucking world, your time, right? We all spend our time and youth. Time we probably should have spent fucking like having fun and like doing shit we enjoy.
Yeah.
But we work.
Yeah, we spent it trying to develop skills and things that we don't get us anywhere. It's like I spent all my youth learning to do comedy and then I'm not even good at it.
I thought about this too the other day where it was like, I wish I could go back. Like, I think that's what
sometimes really successful people are the people who, like, the thing I wish I could go back and do what I know now. Like, knowing what I know now and the skills that I possess now, I wish I could have had them when I was like 23.
Oh man, what an original thought.
You know what I mean? But then, like, successful people are the people who, like don't need to do that because they've already possessed what they know in the future, but they can do it back then. Yeah. They made the right moves back then. That's what I think.
I always like this line from Against the Wind.
Fuck you, Moth Boy.
From Against the Wind by Bob Seger. He says, I wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. I sometimes think that.
I wish that I knew what I know now when I was younger.
There you go.
Ooh La La by Faces?
Mm.
I think.
Don't know.
It's a song.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Ooh La La.
It's like that. It's like that old adage, youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's like, yeah.
So there you go. Child or Negro. I mean, where's my fucking money?
Take his youth. Take his youth and use it to repair your crippled, disgusting body. That's Charo Negro.
Your mouthless, noseless, eyeless bod.
Would you sell your soul?
No.
Why or why not?
No. I don't know. I think that there's a cap on it. Like, obviously, you know, I was listening to even recently, like, a pretty well-known comedian. His name is Tom Segura.
Mm-hmm.
He's been getting some traction. He's been getting some fame. He's blowing up. He's been blowing up for years now. And he's like now in the level of, like, basically, you know, like, I guess generational wealth and or like fuck you money, where it's like, you know, you can charter a private jet and just go places and spend $50,000 on a dinner. Like, that's like, you're done. Like, you're done. You don't have to worry about anything. You can just perform and do what you want, right? So, and he was kind of just talking about it, and he's like, it's like, I mean, obviously he's a comedian, so he's like, yeah, it's fucking amazing to be wealthy. And I don't care. I'll fucking, like, talk about it. Like, he's like, you should talk about it. You earned it or whatever, right? Like, it's like, you know, he's joking. Like, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, like, whatever. But it's like, no, it's fucking great. What are you talking about? It's amazing. But, you know, at the end of the day, it just makes things easier. Just makes things so easier. Like he even said the traveling thing. Like, it's like, oh, you get to the airport, it's like super packed. And you're like, oh, fuck. It's like, well, when you're insanely wealthy, it's like, oh, all right, I'll just pay somebody to fucking charter me a private jet. Like, I don't have to wait. I don't have to do anything. I just go where I want to go. I have no barriers, right? Removes the barriers.
Yeah.
So what was the question?
Why wouldn't you sell your soul to be rich?
Oh,
you're kind of making the case that you should.
You probably should. It seems like a fucking great life.
Yeah.
But I think at some level, you know, after you make a certain amount, it's like, it stops. Like, I think that's why some of these, like we were recently on our Patreon, right? We talked about.
We talked about how we've made so much money from the Patreon that it doesn't matter anymore. Right?
No, we recently did an episode on Bobby Fischer's fucked up life.
Yeah.
And so we talked about how Bobby Fischer achieved such a level of chess greatness that it was like boring to him.
Yeah.
And I think maybe not. I don't know. You see that with some of these billionaires where it's just like you achieve a certain level of wealth and you're just like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to go fuck around on Mars now because I got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to go fuck around with other companies and people and governments and just do whatever the fuck I want because I'm so bored. And I think at a certain level, maybe with this, like, if a Charo Negro kind of scenario, it'd be like, okay, you did the money thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not downplaying it. It does make life easier and it is fucking dope. But at a certain level, then, you know, hey, when you go to sleep at night, you got to remember, like, oh, fuck, there's nothing you could do. You sold your soul.
Yeah.
It's coming. You can't, no money in the world can buy back time and soul. So at the end of the day, I guess, you know, earning that king's fortune, you should do it in a way that where you didn't have to sell your soul.
Would you get married to a really rich person who was close to dying just to get
I see. You know what? Honestly, I don't know. I don't really see anything wrong with that.
Me either. I would do it.
Like, Anna Nicole Smith fucking got, like...
Good for her.
Right, but it's like, dude, this fucking old dumbass was willing to do that. Yeah. So, what the fuck? I mean, okay, at a certain level, though, if there's, like, somebody with, like, straight-up dementia, and it's like, you're taking advantage of them, that's one thing.
I mean, Anna Nicole Smith is, like, a really, like, all-the-way romance scam in some ways.
Yeah.
Where it's like, but, she, you know, it's like, she could have not done that. She could have not married him.
I don't actually know much about that situation, like where that fucking old ass geezer was in his life, but like, yeah. He's a billionaire and he's looking around at his kids and he's like, I fucking hate my kids. I'm gonna give all my money to my fucking like fourth wife.
My,
who's a Playboy playmate.
My big chested pornographic wife.
Right. You know, and she had demons of her own, which is also a very sad story.
Yeah. It really is a sad story, to be honest. But
yeah.
I would do it though. I would marry for money.
Hell yeah. I mean, if you know up front that that's what this thing is.
I married once for love. I'm not doing it again. Maybe the third time for money.
Yeah.
I'm for what? For love. But I want the middle one's the next.
Fool me once.
The next one's for money.
Bunkfuckers, what do you think? You taking El Charro Negro's deal?
You gonna take that sack from his horse?
Take that sack from the horse?
I'll tell you what about this story for me, Art. I'm getting big Wendigo vibes from this.
Wow. Didn't see that coming.
Big Wendigo vibes because, I'll tell you what, to me, this seems like a sort of similar situation where there's already indigenous ideas about the spiritual world, about the natural world, and then there's this overlay of Europeanness to it. So, obviously, in Mesoamerican culture, there would not be a demonic horseman in traditional folklore because there were no horsemen. And similar to like in the Wendigo situation, the like native peoples in Canada and the northern United States, they didn't have this concept of like a shape-shifting, like a werewolf type of thing. That was all brought from Europe. So to me, this seems like a similar situation where it's this blending of the two folklores.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like shitting on the topic, but...
Oh my God, you're going to shit on the topic.
I'm going to shit all over it.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'm going to take a big old Charro Negro's horse-sized dump all over this fucking topic. No, I just think that there's a really strong tie-in to that sort of... I don't know if you call it like sociological. I guess sociological, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tie-in to like, where did this story originate from?
Mm-hmm.
It is a blend of, you know...
Well, and
different,
you know,
cultures.
The Wendigo, some people see that as like a cautionary tale about colonization.
Right.
This seems very much a cautionary tale about colonization. I think there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow. You didn't think of that?
No.
Hey, Beefers, I'm going to take that as a win. I brought an original idea to Art today. Got in thinking. He hadn't considered it yet.
Fuck you, moth boy.
What?
Patting yourself on the fucking back.
Good for me. I didn't think you were going to do it, so I might as well do it myself.
Look at you. You're so fucking smug right now.
Hey, look at old Andy. Got one for the team, Beefers. Old Andy still has a little fight in him. Got a little, I still got some cum to shoot. All right, what else do you think about this topic? You want to get to verdicts?
We can get to verdicts.
Okay.
Would
you like to start?
No, you.
Okay. So I think the question before us here is, how much do we think El Charro Negro is a true supernatural phenomenon that's happening? Do we actually think that this is existing in our corporeal world, that the ghost or a demonic charro is going around and offering people money in exchange for their souls? Pedro, I'm sorry, but I'm going case closed.
Whoa. Like a
moth to a flame. I can't resist myself. If it's a ghost, if it's a demon, I'm not going to believe it. So what I think about this, though, is that this is a pretty cool folklore.
Great.
I like folklore.
Who doesn't?
We cover a lot of folklore on here, and it's very interesting to me.
It's always
these cultural
great.
Like things that result in these stories. So I think this is a very interesting story. Pedro, thank you for suggesting it, because it was a good, interesting topic. But I'm case closed. I don't think it's a real thing, but I think it's a good folklore.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Andy. I'm case closed on it as well. This one especially is very folklore to me. It's just got such a nice folklore tie-in and everything, and it's like a classic tale of greed. You know, don't be greedy, and don't sell your fucking kids for money. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a great fucking topic, though.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's a great topic. Well, that's our show for the day. Bunkers. That's our show for the week, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have a new one tomorrow. So let us know what you think. Tell us, how do you feel about El Charro Negro?
Yeah.
You buying into it? You giving up your soul for a sack of gold? Let us know. Use the tweet at us, Instagram us. Let us know. Use the hashtag. Hashtag
moths suck.
Hashtag moths suck. Use the hashtag moths suck. Tweet at us at Mr. Bunker Pod. Check us out on Instagram at Mr. Bunker Pod. Email us MrBunkerPod@gmail.com or hit us up on the web, Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast.com. Bunk Bunkers, if you feel so inclined and you have the means to do so, please check out our Patreon, patreon.com/ Mr. Bunker Pod, where you can get access to, for only $5 a month, you can get access to tens of hours of behind-the-scenes Patreon-only content. You can get...
Multiple tens.
It's at least 40.
Right.
And maybe over 50 now. I don't know. I'm not doing the math.
Right.
It's not my job to do the math.
Sure.
If you want to do the math, sign up for the Patreon and add it up. I don't fucking care. It's multiple hours of extra content. Behind-the-scenes, Patreon-only content.
Yep.
Only behind-the-scenes. So it's a lot of Art and I breathing heavily into the microphones and talking about what we had for lunch. You're going to love it. You can also get access to our Discord. We have a very fun group of people there, and we would love to have you join us. So check it out, patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. I guess that's everything housekeeping-wise. Art, do you have any last words?
Bunkfunkers, don't bring home strange snakes. Bunkfunkers, don't dig holes and go into other people's properties to fuck their wives. Bunkfunkers, don't, and Bunkfunkers, you know what, you know, don't accept strange bags of monies from strangers riding horses. I think those are the lessons.
Great life tips from Art,
yeah.
And something you can put into practice right away.
Yeah, yeah, those are very usable.
So, I mean,
avoid all those situations.
Yeah, actively avoid all those situations. I mean, Bunkfunkers, if you have the opportunity, don't ever go outside and don't ever talk to another person.
Yeah, that's my lifestyle.
That's the art way of life. So thank you for joining us again on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast for not the titular Mr. Bunker, but for my gigantic co-host, Art Stone. This is me, Andy Hart, saying that was the whole enchilada.
It's me, Mr. Ed.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.